following podcast is brought to you exclusively by the R&R Podcast Network. Flagship edition of the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. A hard-hitting, in-depth, cutting-edge look into the world of professional wrestling. Now, let's introduce your host, Rad Rob, Rob Francois.
Ladies and gents, this is the moment you've waited for. You've been searching in the dark, sweat soaking through the floor.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. This is your WWE Backlash 2020 post-game wrap-up show. I'm your host, Rad Rob, Rob Francois. I hope you guys enjoyed the pay-per-view tonight. I did, for the most part. And it's really a mixed bag on social media. A lot of people liked it. A lot of people didn't like it. Some people loved it. And a lot of people hated it. But I, for one, enjoyed it. And I had a good time. This is going to be a quick review, but let's get down into it. During the kickoff show, we had a United States Championship match. The recent newly crowned WWE United States Champion Apollo Crews took on Andrade with Zelina Vega and Angel Garza in his corner, and Apollo Crews got the win. He defended his title in a really good match between these two. You guys know I've been high on Andrade for a while, and I always thought Apollo was a fantastic athlete and had a great look and a great physique, but never got used well. And it's good to see him start to get a push. And I'm glad that they kept the title on him here. Angel Garza tried to interfere in the match. Kevin Owens ended up coming out to kind of to even the odds and be in Cruz's corner. Andrade tried to hit his hammerlock DDT for the finish. But Cruz countered with a toss powerbomb for the win. So Apollo Crews is still your WWE United States champion, and I did predict that he would win, so that is 1-0 in my favor. To kick off the main show, we had the Women's Tag Team Championship match. The WWE Women's Tag Team Champions, Bayley and Sasha Banks, defended their titles against Billie Kay and Peyton Royce of the Iconics, and Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. This match, to me, I mean, I get why it was placed on the card, given the fact that we have some pretty high-profile matches on this show. Typically, you want to set the tone with a high-intensity match, and this match certainly was. It wasn't a bad match. It was clearly better than anything AEW's ever done in their women's division. But I didn't think it was fantastic. I thought it was a solid match. And Sasha Banks got a sneaky roll up on Alexa Bliss for the three count. So the winners and still WWE Women's Tag Team Champions, Bayley and Sasha Banks. they played a shot of Braun Strowman arriving at the arena in his black classic Pontiac Grand National, which came into play with Miz and Morrison a couple weeks ago when they smashed his car when they were pranking him. We'll talk more about that later on. The next match was Jeff Hardy taking on Shane. Oh, sorry, I did pick Bayley and Sasha to retain their titles, so that's 2-0. The next match was Jeff Hardy taking on Sheamus. We know the story between the two. Sheamus had taken exception with Jeff Hardy, really mostly Michael Cole for the first few weeks. Before Hardy came back to wrestle, they were showing, small pieces of his WWE Network special, his WWE 24 special, I think it's going to be, every week. right after Sheamus's match. You know, before Sheamus is even out of the ring, Michael Cole was throwing to that next segment, and he got pissed off at Michael Cole. And I took exception to that because I'm like, Michael Cole just being told what to do. He's doing his job. I didn't agree with Sheamus getting pissed off at Michael Cole. He should have got pissed off at whoever the producer was. But in any event, that led to Hardy coming back and them having altercations, and even so much so far as, you know, 2 weeks ago, and they opened SmackDown with a car crash. Poor Elias got hit by a car. Whoever was in the car fled the scene. Cops were there. Renee Young was there covering it. It was the very first thing you saw when they kicked off SmackDown Live on Fox. And the cops went into the car, found a bottle of alcohol, what looked like to be whiskey. Cop opened up, smelled it, and he's like, yeah, that's alcohol. Pulls down the driver's side visor, and paperwork for the rental falls down, and he grabs it, and he's like, Jeff Hardy? Is there Jeff Hardy here? Anybody? Anyone? Jeff Hardy? Hello? Jeff Hardy? it wasn't that dramatic, but it was a bad actor. And eventually, like, the cops and WWE agents, producers, went running down to the back area of the Performance Center and found Jeff Hardy laying on the ground, reeking of alcohol, not knowing where he was. His head hurt. You know, they dragged him back into the police car, which took like 10 minutes to do. But in any event, he showed back up at the end of SmackDown that night, got bailed out or got released or whatever on his own recognizance, and claimed that, you know, this past week that he was set up, or maybe that was 3 weeks ago. That was 3 weeks ago. I took a vacation between there and my timeline's all messed up. But anyway, he came back the week after and said there was an eyewitness that was there that showed somebody with red hair and red beard fleeing the scene, getting out of the car, and running away. And while Jeff was at the police station, they threw sobriety tests after sobriety tests after him, and he passed them all. And I'm like, how many tests do they have? But anyway, so in this past week on SmackDown, they had a contract signing, and Sheamus would not sign the contract until Jeff Hardy took a live urine test right in front of everybody. They had this little booth with a black curtain around it so you couldn't see inside of it, but Jeff stood inside of it with his doctor to make sure that it was him, you know, filling up the specimen cup, and it was like it was like a 2-quart cup. So Jeff filled it up. Doctor took the doctor, who actually was an actor, he's a paid actor on Fiverr. The doctor took a piece of like litmus paper, like a pH test, and dipped it into the urine, and stood there for a while Sheamus continued to cut a promo. And then eventually, you know, Jeff Hardy, as you've probably seen and heard, grabbed the cup of urine and said it's better to be pissed off than pissed on, threw it in Sheamus's face. Sheamus sold it like a champ. Doctor came back later on, told him that the results were negative. And here we go. We're off to the races. So Jeff Hardy against Sheamus. And my review of the match won't even be as long as, as what led up to it. Sheamus got the win, which I predicted that he would. That's 3-0. I'm assuming they're going to have some kind of a gimmick match at Extreme Rules next month. Since Hardy won the first match in the Intercontinental Title Tournament, Sheamus obviously gets the win here. They're 1-1. The rubber match will probably be set for next month. And I'm picking Jeff Hardy to get the win, to get the blowout, the win in the blowoff match. Probably be some kind of a cage match or Extreme Rules or Falls Count Anywhere, something like that, to where Jeff can do something stupid and crazy and swanton off of something and pin Sheamus. I'm already predicting what's going to happen. So you can bank on it. But Sheamus gets the win with a bro kick, which it was a fantastic match. These two guys have great chemistry. I've always been a big fan of Sheamus, always been a huge, giant fan of the Hardy Boys, especially Jeff Hardy. And, you know, these guys completely delivered and had a very, very entertaining match.
Hey, this is Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. It's amazing to me that turtles have the ability to speak, let alone host wrestling podcasts. I guess that's what makes them rad.
The Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast.
Caleb Braxton interviewed Miz and Morrison backstage. Braxton informed that whoever scores the pin or submission in their match will become the sole Universal Champion, and they can't, you know, do like a Freebird rules kind of thing, and they both be Universal Champion. Otis arrived with Mandy to let them know that no matter who wins tonight, if it happens to be one of them, that he may cash in his Money in the Bank contract, and he will win. And they look pretty. They look pretty scared. Actually, they sold it very, very well. Trying to make Otis seem like he is a legitimate threat, and he's a big deal. We had a Raw Women's Championship match. The newly crowned Raw Women's Champion winning the title at Money in the Bank because Becky Lynch was obviously leaving to go get ready to have a baby in a few months. So instead of the contract being inside the case, it was the Raw Women's Championship. So Asuka ended up winning the Women's Money in the Bank match. And she is the current Raw Women's Champion. She defended her title against Nia Jax. Or as Brad Shepherd calls her, Nia Snacks. The match was okay. Pretty hard-hitting. I mean, these two brought it. I've been very critical, and so has everyone, of Nia Jax lately because she's been very dangerous. And I watched this match very, very closely to make sure she didn't do anything frivolous or stupid or, you know, or dangerous. And she kept it pretty simple. And, you know, the two have great chemistry. I'm pretty sure they face each other in NXT. I could be wrong on that. I thought they did. But Asuka ends up retaining the title, keeping Nia Jax strong with a double count out, which, God, I don't even remember the last time we saw a double count out, which really results in a draw and the champion retaining their title. But near the end of the match, Asuka got Nia Jax into an armbar outside of the ring. Jax got up and sent Asuka into the barricade. Asuka recovered and nailed Jax with a kick to the head right as the referee finished their 10 count, counting both of them out of the ring. Like I said, resulting in a draw, pretty much. And Asuka, via the rules, retained her title and did it in a way where Nia didn't look weak by getting pinned or getting tapped out. And they could probably have another match down the road. After the match, Asuka attacked Nia Jax with a diving hip attack from the ring apron and took her out. So not a bad match. I can't complain about it. It was pretty solid. Our next match was for the WWE Universal Championship, which essentially is the SmackDown World title. The champion Braun Strowman, who won it by defeating Goldberg at WrestleMania, defended against John Morrison and The Miz in a handicap match. And I really wasn't looking forward to this match, only because, like, this is the best they can do with Braun Strowman. I know we're still in the midst of a pandemic and a lot of people are out and a lot of people don't want to wrestle. And to be honest, they really haven't built up that many big stars even before we stopped having live events. But a handicap match, I mean, come on. Especially, I don't know. I know Bray Wyatt's out. He recently had a baby and I know he wants to take time off to spend with his family. I get that. I'm pretty sure he will be back at Extreme Rules, playing the role of the Fiend this time and challenge for the title again. But this match wasn't bad. I didn't have high hopes for it. It wasn't a very long match, but I thought it served its purpose. It keeps Braun Strowman strong, who did defend his title. By the way, I did pick every match correctly so far. Just saying. it never happens, trust me. I'm usually off. I'm usually 50-50. But Braun Strowman defended his title with a running power slam on John Morrison. So, as expected, nothing. I don't think anybody really took Miz or Morrison seriously that they were going to win. They haven't, even though they have been featured on TV and they've done a pretty good job, they're pretty much being treated as a comedy act right now. And as you know, in WWE, guys like that never get over. So no one expected them to beat Braun Strowman. Just kind of a placeholder, a filler match until the Fiend comes back. That led to our next match for the WWE Championship, the Raw World title. The champion, Drew McIntyre, who defeated the Beast, the Brock Lesnar, at WrestleMania, taking on Bobby Lashley with MVP in his corner. MVP is now his, I don't know if you want to call him his manager or his mentor, but MVP has recently taken a liking to Bobby Lashley, and much to the chagrin of Bobby's wife, Lana, who can't stand MVP, which is pretty funny. And I still think at some point in the next few months, you will see Bobby Lashley dump Lana, essentially turning in babyface and really getting that full Nelson finisher over, as well as the spear. But we'll see. So before the match even started, Lashley beat the living crap out of McIntyre and got him in that full Nelson, and Drew couldn't break it. And it took about four or five referees in there to pull Lashley off of Drew. Drew sold it for quite a while, eventually told the referee that he was good to go. One little nitpicky thing that I took exception to was before Drew even had his ring jacket off after this, and even stood up in the corner and you know, faced Lashley, like typically, like I'm old school, like back in the old days, you both stand in the corner, referee checks to see if you're ready, and then he rings the bell. Drew wasn't even set, and the referee's like, ring the bell, ring the bell. And then Lashley proceeded to beat the crap out of him again. So that's just a little nitpicky thing that I don't like. I don't like the way some of the rules have changed, or a lot of the ways that referees are not used the way they used to be, or not as important as they used to be. They're just kind of in the background. Really in the past, they've played an integral part of every match, but that's just me. McIntyre eventually fought back. They had a really good match. I like these two. They did a good job. But in the end, he got the Claymore kick on Lashley for the three count, essentially defending his WWE Championship once again. Drew stays very, very strong. He's been booked like a freaking monster. And I don't know if they're going to keep on going with Lashley, or ultimately who will be the one to possibly take the title from Drew McIntyre. But right now, looks like he's pretty much unstoppable. And that's good, because he deserves it. He's worked very, very hard for that. Not to say Lashley doesn't deserve it either. I said this could have gone either way. And, you know, it might be time to pull the trigger on a big Lashley run. But I think they're going to wait on that until the Lana stuff gets out of the way, to really push him as a babyface either late this year or early next year, maybe even winning the Rumble next year and being that mega super babyface. But we'll see. So they break out to the parking lot. Tom Phillips was talking about something. I think he was setting up the next match, and he's like, well, we have word that the Street Profits and the Viking Raiders are fighting out in the parking lot. And they were. Montez Ford slammed Eric onto the windshield of poor Braun Strowman's car, smashing it again. That's the second time they even took, you know, made note of that. And like, even the guys, even the boys, the Profits and the Raiders, like, oh shit, again, he's going to kill us. And they ran away into the building. They fought in the backstage area for a while. There's a lot of shenanigans going on. They even used, you know, like dramatic music. It was a pre-tape, cinematic style match that, like you've seen lately, you know, with the Gargano and Ciampa match, with the Firefly Funhouse match, with the Boneyard match, and all that. So, Last Man Standing match. It was another one of those matches, but only very, very comedic. This was right along the lines of the Money in the Bank match. At one point, the Profits grabbed golf clubs and they're ready to fight. Then Eric had a shield and an axe. Ivar had his shield and a bowling ball. Eric looked over to Ivar like, really, dude? And Ivar just shrugged his shoulders like, sorry, my bad. That was pretty funny. That bowling ball came into play eventually after the Street Profits said, screw this, and ran away. Montez Ford was on the ground. He got laid out, and Ivar got laid out. When Ivar came to. And during all this, like at certain times, Ivar, they do the squiggly. It's the only way I could describe it, like Wayne's World. They'd show, you know, this a flashback scene, you know, from all the different meetings they've had over the last few weeks during all their various contests, you know. So Ivar was going in and out of consciousness and dreaming about this at one point. That's when my wife was like, this is the dumbest shit ever. But I loved it. I really did. It's so stupid. It's great. That's just me. I love hokey, Naked Gun, you know, airplane, stupid shit like that. You know, kind of parody movies. That's my jam. But Ivar snapped out of it, saw the bowling ball was laying next to him, put his hand in it, and rolled it right towards Montez Ford's balls. Montez sold it like a champ, even into the next scene. The next scene showed Dawkins pouncing Ivar through the a glass door that was there. Like, there's so much glass was broken over the last several months, and especially tonight. Just pounced him right through the door. They both crashed through it. They're laying there in glass. Ivar went into another dream sequence again, and when they came back, you know, Doc was like, or Ivar said, anything we can do, and Doc was like, we can do better. And then, you know, they helped each other up, and they left the building and started to fight a little bit more. Then eventually a character Zawa shows up, and they're like, what the hell are you doing, man? So the Prophets and the Raiders teamed up together to take on Tozawa and a bunch of ninjas, literally guys dressed up in like old school, you know, Japanese movies, dressed up in black ninja outfits with the masks and all the whole deal. And then they just proceeded to do crazy shit, taking out all the ninjas, doing all kinds of different, you know, fuck it. It's hard to explain. You literally have to watch it. But, in the end, they jumped up on top of one of the production trucks or one of the trailers, started fighting up there, eventually knocking each other into this big giant dumpster. When they're all laying there in a dumpster, Ivar broke into his flashback again. When he came to, the female WWE referee, I'm sorry, I don't remember her name. It escapes me right now. She was like, hey, what are you guys doing? Do you have a match coming up? And they're like, oh, God, no way. And then she looks at Ivar and says, hey, Ivar, you're kind of cute. And then looks at Eric and says, you? Not so much. And that's been the running joke from all the women that have been on all these segments over the last month or so. It's just the running joke. It's just so funny. Montez sings a song about how she wants Ivar, but not Eric. And eventually they're like, well, there's something in here. And it was almost like the trash compactor scene from the original Star Wars, the first episode, or episode three, four, the very first Star Wars movie anybody ever saw. And it ended up being an alligator in the dumpster, which scared everybody, and the camera faded to black. So I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was well done. I thought it was hilarious. I really did. I didn't have a problem with it. People hated it. People said it was the dumbest shit ever. But like I said, with all these matches going on and just match after match after match in front of either no people or a few people, it's good to have something to entertain us. And this is right up Vince McMahon and Bruce Pritchard's alley, literally. I didn't have a problem with it. I loved it.
What's going on, everybody? My name is Vampiro. This right here is the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. Tune in, get tuned up, get informed, and enjoy the podcast.
Turtles Wrestling Podcast.
That took us to our main event, being billed as the greatest wrestling match ever, which is, I've told you many times, WWE is very specific about the language that they use and the buzzwords and stuff like that. And for many, many years, Vince McMahon put out an edict that you will not mention the word wrestler or wrestling on our shows. And well, that has since changed, especially when they're literally billing this as the greatest wrestling match ever, because Vince never, ever wanted to be associated with the word wrestling. It's almost like he thought it was a dirty word. He wanted to be sports entertainment and put out an entertainment product and not a wrestling, you know, an old school wrestling contest. But they're back to using the word wrestle and wrestling and wrestler again. So I like it. It's cool. And obviously, a lot of people took exception to this, like Flair, Steamboat, you know, Rock and Austin. You know, you can name Steamboat, Flair, Savage Steamboat. You can go down the line, like Dory Funk and Jack Briscoe, like whatever. This is going to be the greatest wrestling match ever. And they're promoting it that way before it even happens. But I thought Edge did a great job on the Peep Show this past week on Raw, saying that, you know, this is being booked as the greatest wrestling match ever. Like, I don't have enough pressure as it is coming back and not having an actual real wrestling match in the ring in 9.5 years. And now the company is billing it as the greatest match ever. Like, I don't have enough pressure on me as it is. So that was fantastic. And, you know, they kind of broke down the fourth wall and kind of, you know, admitted what they were doing and why they're booking that way. Triple H even called it out on Twitter. And then, you know, the opening package of the show tonight showed clips from Hogan and Andre and Rock and Austin and Austin and Michaels and Michaels and Taker and all that. So they paid tribute to history. And this was another cinematically told match, not clearly as hokey as any of the other stuff. But at one point in the beginning of the match, when they locked up, there's literally like a GoPro or a camera underneath them, just showing them from, you know, looking up at them locking arms. I'm like, oh God, this is really how this match is going to be. But thankfully, they didn't use a lot of hokey stuff like that. One thing I loved in the very beginning, the old MSG like triple microphone came down from the ceiling like they used to do back in the old school days, and the camera. Or the lights went out and just had a spotlight on that. And you heard Howard Finkel's voice introducing Orton and Edge. And I got a little misty-eyed when that happened. That was so cool, and that was a fantastic way. Who better to introduce the booked greatest wrestling match ever than Howard Finkel, the greatest wrestling announcer of all time. Referee was Little H, Charles Robinson, dressed up in the old WWF referees outfits, the I don't even know if it's light blue or off-white shirts with the bow tie and all that, and it was really, really cool to see that. The only thing that was missing there in that presentation would have been like the old, you know, logos on the turnbuckles and the red, white, and blue ring ropes that they used to use. That would have been the perfect thing to add to it, but I like the little mixture of old school and new school and paying homage to the people that were there before them. That being said, the actual lighting in the arena chain, like in the building, changed. It got super, super brighter, like compared to the rest of the show, because, and it was obviously, it was filmed with different cameras to give it a different style look, to end up actually making the visual picture 10 times brighter than it was the entire event. So you can tell that it was pre-taped. And to their credit or discredit, you know, some of this was live. For the most part, the matches were live. But this, since it was pre-taped, they took the live graphic off of the screen, which is very weird to people if you really don't know what's going on. Like, why does it say live and now it doesn't? But just so they wouldn't get crap from fans that knew that this was pre-taped already a few weeks ago. And if they had live on the screen, they would have got a big, huge, no pun intended, backlash from everybody. So they took the live graphic off the screen, and we had, holy crap. I mean, I'm not ready to call it the greatest match ever, but it was a 30-minute match at maybe even 30, 40. And it was good. God, it was good. I knew these guys would tell a great story, and I knew these guys would put on a fantastic match because they're both pros. They're both bona fide Hall of Famers. Edge already being one of them, and Randy's a shoo-in. He's a lock for the Hall of Fame, unless he does something egregious before he gets put in there. I knew these guys were going to have a fucking knockdown dragout. At one point, Edge literally headbutted Orton Hardway and bust him open a little bit just to draw some color, which I was surprised. Events let them do that, but nobody bladed. You could tell it was a clear headbutt to right near his eyebrow, side of the head area. didn't bleed that much. I mean, but it left a good visual. And I have to be honest. Like, if I'm going to call out AEW for doing that, although AEW were clearly blading and bleeding all over the place, blood in a pandemic state, or even nowadays with what we know about, diseases being distributed through blood and all that, and especially Orton's dad, who had, I can't remember the name of it, but he had a particular disease that was easily transferred through blood, not an STD or anything like that, but I wish I could remember the name of it right now. WWE officials didn't know about that, and he got busted open in one of the matches that, when he was in Randy's corner, I think it was maybe a Hell in a Cell match, and people found out that he had a disease after that and could have transmitted to somebody and really, pissed a lot of people off, and he was on the outs at that after that. But I can't remember the exact, disease that he had. But anyway, blood nowadays, it just isn't a good look in general. But they did it, and that's, it is what it is. But man, I'm telling you, the only really stupid part of this match was the fact that they, in post-production, pumped in crowd noise. There was a lot of white noise, even though there was only maybe like 30 people or 40 people in the building, around the ring, NXT people in the behind the plexiglass. There was a clear ambient white noise, that you would get from a crowd, and during the high spots, it would get really loud, and especially Edge's entrance, like the crowd went nuts, and it was really loud. And I'm like, there's not that many people there. That sounds way, way too loud for 30, 40 people, even 50 people. It sounded like his reaction at the Royal Rumble. And there was a lot of crowd noise during this match that was added in post-production, especially this is awesome chant, even though you can see a lot of the people standing around and not everybody was chanting or clapping in tune or in time, which is so funny, but a very, very loud, this is awesome chant that sounds like it would be coming from 10, 20,000 people. So that's a direction they chose to take in the presentation of this match. You could either love it or you could hate it. I didn't hate it, but I didn't really, it was very distracting to me, especially only because of just, it didn't match the visual. There's such a loud crowd noise and there's not many people there. That's why I took exception to it. But man, these two beat the crap out of each other. Really did. Edge kicked out of multiple RKOs. But in the end, Edge got him in that triangle choke hole that he does, that standing triangle choke. Orton got free with a low blow. And as Edge was down on the mat selling it, Orton went to the corner, loaded up the boot, ran, and punted him in the head. We haven't seen the punt kick in years. That move has been banned for a long time. Banned, I think, even before the curb stomp was. But, Vince is Vince. Vince will take care of his guys, and if it's something important, something special, he's gonna break his own rules. He's going to have blood in the match. He's going to have Randy Orton use the punt for the three count. At the end of the match, Randy got down, put his hand on Edge's chest and his head on Edge's head, and said, "Go home, Edge. Be with your wife, Beth, and your daughters, Ruby and Lyric. You did a great job. You have nothing to be ashamed of." I'm just kind of paraphrasing because I couldn't hear everything that he said. But go home. And Edge just kind of sat there looking up at the lights, and Randy kind of sat there for a while. And it was a show of it was a backhanded thing, but it was still. I still think it was coming from a good place, and it was a show of respect from Randy to Edge. And we'll see what happens from here with Edge. Can you really see these guys wrestling again? I mean, if they just had the self-proclaimed greatest wrestling match ever, what the hell do you do to top that? And this was one of the all-time greatest matches. I'm not going to put it up there as the greatest match just because of the extenuating circumstances. But it was solid. It was so good. It really was. I'm gonna go back and watch it again, and really break it down in detail just to take it all in again. It's almost like watching another movie and two or three times and seeing stuff you didn't see the first time. I'm going to do that again with this match because it was that good. And these guys proved that they are two of the greatest of all time, without a doubt. But Orton got the win. I don't see them wrestling again. I mean, what are you going to do with SummerSlam or something like that? Like, loser leaves the world? Like, loser dies? Like, what the fuck can he do? Like, but I'm going to be honest. I'm literally going to be honest. I don't remember who I picked on this one because I was so torn between the two. I want to say I picked Orton, but I might not have. I'm going to go back and listen to the tape from the flagship to see who I picked. But up until this, I did pick every match correctly. So, I'll have to go back and get an instant replay and see who I picked. Maybe I'll even throw it here in post-production. But yeah, this event as a whole was good. A lot of people are going to hate it because of the hokey Viking Raiders and Street Profits stuff and the crowd noise in this match and all that. But all in all, I thought this was a solid pay-per-view, and I think every match was good. There weren't really any stinkers. I thought every match was good. A couple of matches were great. And the final main event was fantastic, was phenomenal. So I give it a thumbs up for sure. All right, guys, that wraps up this WWE Backlash 2020 post-game wrap-up show. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at RadRobGaming. Check me out on Twitch, twitch.tv/RadRobGaming, streaming every Tuesday night, 6 p.m. Central, and every Sunday afternoon at 2 in the afternoon. And please check out my YouTube gaming channel called RadRobGaming. If you want to follow the show on Twitter, we are at RadTurtlesPOD. Send us an email, RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. Leave us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/RadTurtlesWrestling, and check out our Pro Wrestling Tees page. It is ProWrestlingTees.com/RadTurtlesWrestling. And finally, if you want to follow the R&R Podcast Network on Twitter, it's our company Twitter account. It is at RR Pod Network. Guys, I'll be back on Tuesday for another edition of RTW Rewind. I was supposed to have from the Killer Bees, B. Brian Blair on. I had his old partner, Jumpin' Jim Brunzell, on a few weeks ago. Brian and I were supposed to hook up on Friday, but a few things got lost in communication, and we couldn't work it out in time. Unfortunately, he can't get back to me until Tuesday, but we're going to record Tuesday afternoon, and I'll drop that on Thursday. So Tuesday will be me talking about some of my favorite matches or wrestlers growing up as a kid, which is the initial premise of the show. So tune in for that. And then on Thursday, we'll have the interview with B. Brian Blair, formerly of the Killer Bees in the WWF. He is the owner and the CEO of the Cauliflower Alley Club. So I'm looking forward to speaking with the other half of the Killer Bees. And I love my conversation with Jim Brunzell, who's a phenomenal person. And I've heard nothing but great things about Brian as well. So that'll be coming up on Thursday. So until then, guys, enjoy the rest of, just depends when you listen to this, the rest of your Sunday, what's left of it. Yeah, most of us have to go to work on Monday. So it's back to the grind. But we'll see you right back here on Tuesday for another edition of RTW Rewind. Thanks for listening, guys. I appreciate all your support, and we'll see you on the next show. Take care.
Thanks again for listening to the flagship edition of the Red Turtles Wrestling Podcast. Please follow RTW on Twitter at Red Turtles Pod. You can also send us an email at RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. We'd like to thank you for all your support. You've been listening to the Red Turtles Wrestling Podcast, exclusively here on the R&R Podcast Network.